This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we're discussing the Arizona governor's race. Our guest is Kelly Fryer, Democratic candidate for governor. We previously met with two other Democratic candidates, Steve Farley and ASU education professor David Garcia. In the second half of our show, we will be talking to Ken Bennett, who's also running for governor. And you can bet we've got an invitation out to the governor, which will complete the circuit. But Kelly Fryer, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
Let me start out with a little bit of a test, okay? I want to ask you the Admiral Stockdale question. Do you remember what that is?
Let's see. Stockdale, he was a prisoner of war.
Yeah, he was a prisoner of war, and he was vice presidential candidate for Perot. And he got on the debate and he looked a little bit lost and he asked himself the question, which is the question I'm asking you now. Who are you and why are you here?
I am here because I think Arizona should work for everybody. And I really mean everybody when I say that. Right now it's not. I think it can. And I think I'm the person who can help make that happen.
Well, That you answered one of the two questions implicit. The other one is, who are you? Tell us just a little bit about your background and what brought you here.
I have spent 29 years in executive and CEO leadership positions. I got my start actually as a community organizer. I share that with somebody famous.
Yeah, nobody's going to be dissing that one anymore. I mean, famously,
I don't
of course,
think so.
Sarah Palin said, well, you know, what does a community organizer do? She found out.
Yes, she did. But I was a Lutheran pastor and seminary professor. Got kind of famous, actually, in that universe for my track record of walking into congregations that were struggling and helping them turn around. Wrote a bunch of books, ran a consultancy across the United States and Canada, helping other congregational leaders learn how to do the same kind of transformation in their settings. And for about the last 10 years, I've been running nonprofit and social service organizations. Right now, I'm the CEO of the YWCA Southern Arizona, which is part of the oldest civil rights and social justice organization in the nation.
Interesting. I usually think of the Y in that context.
Well, the YM, with the one with the song, that's a different organization. The YWCA's mission is ending racism, empowering women, and promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. Down in Southern Arizona, we welcome about 50,000 visitors to our campuses every year and serve thousands of mostly women, but not all, entrepreneurs and immigrants, women who come to us for help getting a job, starting a business, getting out of a domestic violence situation, learning leadership skills to become community, political, business leaders. And so I am intimately aware of the kinds of issues facing people in our state. And that's what drove me to do this, Mike.
In fairness, I'm guessing I'm not the first person to make that confusion.
No, it is a little bit of a branding issue, but like I said, we're the oldest women's intersectional civil rights and social justice org in the nation.
Okay, two part question for you. First is, and I'd like you to hear both of the questions, what would you most like to accomplish as governor? And the second part is the hard part, which is, how do you do that with what in all likelihood will be a Republican legislature?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a pretty robust platform on my website. I hope that your listeners will go visit. I have more detailed policy proposals about more issues than anybody else in this race. But I think my top, you know, I've got top sort of three top policy issues. And then a value statement that underlies all of them, which I'll get to. But in terms of policy, you know, I'd like to see a 15 county economic development plan for the state of Arizona. Maricopa County, you know, as our current governor likes to say, is one of the fastest growing counties in the United States. All the other 14 counties, not so much. I work in Pima County, which is the poorest county of its size.
Yeah, I follow the economic data rather religiously, and the Tucson area really has been a laggard in this recovery.
Well, it not just Tucson. I mean, I've been 24, going on 25,000 miles around the state since I started campaigning on February 1st. And people are struggling all over this state. And even in Maricopa County, the economic growth is not benefiting everybody equally. There are a sliver of folks in our state who are doing really well, and I'm happy for them. I think that's awesome. I think we ought to be really focused on making our economy work for everybody. So I've got some plans for economic development that really starts at the bottom up. Starts at the grassroots. And, you know, I think we've seen the results of this trickle-down approach to economics here in Arizona and across the country. It's failed, and I think it's putting our state at risk. So that's number one. Number two, I think we need to fix our public school system. I have, I think, a unique position on education among the candidates in this race, and I'm proud of that. And third, not in priority, but just in order of this conversation, we need to deal with our environmental issues. I was at a candidate meet and greet out in the Santan Valley this past weekend, and candidates from all, you know, both sides were represented. And I watched while Republicans from that community just chewed out Doug Ducey's staffers. Because showing $900 water bills, talking about how they're not even able to take showers in their homes. Our current government has government leaders here in Arizona have failed to solve the water problem here in Arizona. So those are my top three issues. But I'll tell what underlies it all, Mike, is this: a commitment to people. My pledge is that every policy I write, every bill I sign, every budget line I draft will be done through a human rights lens that puts people first.
You know, you've cited the three issues. When we come back after the break, I'd like you to delve into those just a little bit, because I heard the priorities, but what I didn't hear was the plan. I want to go there. But before the break, I got a shorter question for you, which is who do you regard as your political heroes?
Well, you know, when I was very small, Robert Kennedy stopped in my town on a campaign swing when he was running for president. I had an opportunity to meet him, and his commitment to ending poverty, to really addressing racism, and to figuring out how to live in a more peaceful world impacted me then, just as a small child, and that's stayed with me ever since.
An interesting case, and this being the 50th anniversary of his death, there are a number of really good documentaries out. The thing that most struck me was that this was something that he came to relatively late. Mm-hmm. It was somebody who clearly grew up in privilege, went to Appalachia and to the Deep South and saw people that were hungry and had no concept of that. And I think it changed him immeasurably. But we will be back with Kelly Fryer, Democratic candidate for governor, in just a minute in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Kelly Fryer, Democratic candidate for governor. In your first answer, you outlined three priorities: economy, schools, and environment. I wonder if we could take those in order, and if you could give us, obviously, there's a limit to how detailed you can go, but give us, all right, you'd like to improve the economy. Everybody would like that. What specifically would you propose doing?
Well, you know, right now, the big tax breaks, tax incentives, they're going to big companies. You know, there's a lot of effort to get big companies from out of state to come and open up here. I think that instead of prioritizing our tax dollars for companies that are headquartered in some other state or even some other country, we ought to be using our investment power to prioritize those companies that locate here in Arizona. I think that our tax incentives ought to be favoring companies that are headquartered here, that hire Arizonans, that pay a living wage.
Aren't big companies. We've lost all the major corporate.
Well,
I mean, we had Dial there. I mean, basically, it's almost a null set.
I think that is connected to the second priority, which is education. Mm-hmm. you know, folks don't want to come live in a state that doesn't value its kids, doesn't value its educational institutions. And I think that what has happened under Doug Ducey and previous administrations is absolutely a travesty. Of the three, of the five candidates running for Arizona governor, I like to include all the candidates. It's been a little frustrating to be the invisible candidate in this race. I'm in this race to represent people who feel like they've been treated like they're invisible. And that includes a lot of folks who live out in our rural communities and small towns where the only option they have is the local public school. This whole business about school choice is nonsense. Most Arizonans choose a local public school. That's where we should be investing our tax dollars.
85% to 90% somewhere in there.
Right, exactly.
I want to interrupt my own question. Since you kind of made allusion to being the invisible candidate, kind of swipe at you, tell me what is the biggest point of differentiation between you, Steve Farley, and David Garcia?
Well, of the five candidates that are in this race for governor,
the other two being Republicans,
right? Mm-hmm. I am the only one that fully supports Invest in Ed. I believe that we need to have tax reform in our state, and we need to reverse all of the tax cuts that have benefited primarily the wealthy and big corporations over the last 40 years in order to fund our public school system and all of our other priorities. I'm the only candidate that fully supports Invest in Ed, that is 100% opposed to using public money to fund private schools. I'm against the voucher system. And I think that our charter schools should be transparent, accountable, and rare. I'm the only one of the five candidates who will say all three of those things. And I think that's a big differentiation. I also have a lot more experience and ideas about how to create economic development from the bottom up. I don't hear any of the other candidates even talking about that kind of thing.
Tell us about those, if you would.
So, I'll go back to that. Instead of investing in companies that, you know, big corporations that are coming here from out of state with, low wage jobs, I think that we ought to be incentivizing companies that are paying a living wage. One of the things that I'll do is to create a wage board and I'll invite representatives from business and labor to sit together and look at what's the prevailing wage for each major industry sector in Arizona. And we can incentivize companies to pay that living wage. I think this argument about, you know, where should the minimum wage be is a little bit off track. We need to be talking about how do we pay people enough money so they don't require government services. People want to be self-sufficient. They want to be independent. They want an opportunity to really succeed. So let's reward companies who actually help people do that. I think we also need to be using our tax incentives to support locally owned small businesses in all 15 counties around the state.
How do you do that?
Well, for example, I'm going to take Tucson for an example. We've got a lot of economic growth and development happening in downtown Tucson. And typically what happens is first in that kind of redevelopment are locally owned small businesses. They get in there before anybody else will get in there. They begin to turn the economy around. And then the folks who own those buildings say, I bet I could make more money if I rented this space to Starbucks rather than this local coffee shop. Well, I think that we need to provide some incentives to landlords to keep their rates reasonable so that local small businesses can stay and thrive. I think that, in a case like that, in a downtown like that, businesses that have been there for a long time, legacy businesses, if you will, let's create some tax credits for them to encourage them and to enable them to stay in place. We put our money in the wrong place, thinking that if we give it to folks at the top of the food chain, it'll trickle down to the rest of us. That doesn't work. We need to be supporting folks at the grassroots.
One thing I want to ask, what would you do with our overall tax system? Here's a factoid. Arizona has one of the most regressive tax systems in the country. Just a few facts. Poorest 20% pays 12.5% total income. Mm-hmm. Middle 60% pays 9.5%. Top 1% pays 4.6%. Mm-hmm. That's the net effect of all of our taxes put together.
Right. Yeah, we need comprehensive tax reform. I'm a supporter of the Invest in Ed ballot initiative. Mm-hmm. I wish it wasn't necessary. We should not be reforming our tax codes at the ballot box. We need a governor. We need a state legislature that is committed to creating a fair and equitable tax structure in Arizona.
The Invest in Ed proposal would essentially undo about 10 or 12 years of cutting the top tax rates.
Well, you know, it really, we have to go back to the 1960s when those top income tax brackets were higher. Mm-hmm. You know, they were slashed all the way back then. Right now, the top earners in our state are paying the same tax rate, give or take, that they were paying in 1933, for goodness sakes. And it's about a third of what folks in those high income tax brackets are paying in other states. We need to fix that. But I don't think that goes far enough. I mean, that's one piece of the reform that we need. I think we need to really look at reversing that capital gains tax cut that was passed in 2012. That was irresponsible at that point. Slashed about $500 million out of our budget overnight. So we've got a lot of work to do. We need a governor in office who is going to put people first and make sound economic decisions that benefit everybody, rather than benefiting himself and his wealthy friends.
You have about 20 seconds. You want to make a concluding comment.
You know, thanks for having me on, Mike. I am in this race to represent folks whose voices are not being heard. I think that's a little bit scary to the elite. I'm glad that you've got me here so folks can hear our voices.
Okay, that's Kelly Fryer, Democratic candidate for governor. After the break, we will have a Republican candidate, former state Secretary of State Ken Bennett, when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, as promised, we are here with Ken Bennett. Ken Bennett is a former Secretary of State and I believe State Senate President.
Yes, I was State Senator for 8 years, 4 years as President of the Senate.
Okay, you're a Republican. You're challenging a Republican incumbent, Governor Doug Ducey. What's your beef with him?
Well, I'm running because the truth matters, and in some very critical areas, we're not being told the truth. We've been told that the Arizona state budget's been balanced for the last 4 years, and yet the total debt of the state of Arizona has gone up by $1 billion during those same 4 years. So if your debts are going up, I don't think your budgets are balanced.
How do they do that? The Constitution says you run a balanced budget.
They're just ignoring things off of the budget and letting the debts grow while they tell the rest of us that we have a balanced budget. We were told 2 years ago that the governor's plan to solve K-12 funding was Prop 123. He said on many occasions it was going to put in an additional $350 million a year and that most of that was going to go to the teachers. Neither one of those things happened. It's barely been half of that amount. But even if it was half of that amount, if that had gone to the teachers each of the last 3 years, the teachers would have received a 6% raise each of those last 3 years. That's 18%.
Which is within rounding error almost, of
the big 20 for 20 thing. Mm-hmm. We were told that this last budget that was passed did not have any accounting tricks and gimmicks, and it didn't have any tax increases in it. And yet it had both. There's hundreds of millions of dollars of accounting tricks and gimmicks. They raised hospital assessment rates and provider fees, they're called. They raised basically health care costs on Arizonans by about $55 million so that they could draw down more federal money. And then that allowed them to take some state money that was in one bucket and move it to another and then move that over to the budget and help pay for the salaries. So they raised the vehicle license tax by almost $100 million this year and are on track to do the same next year. They said they were
$100 million.
$100 million.
$100 million sounds like a lot, though. We're talking about 1% of state budget.
It's 1% of the state budget, but there was a tax increase of about $200 million over the next 2 years. They said it was to fund the Arizona Department of Public Safety, our highway patrol, but they raised it by more than that so that they could siphon money off and rob Peter to pay Paul and free up money to go pay for the 20%. But they really didn't do the 20%. They've done 10. They are talking about maybe doing 5 and 5 in the next couple of years.
You're talking about teacher pay.
Yeah, the teacher pay thing. Mm-hmm.
Which I think everybody recognizes is at this point unfunded. It's a promise without a funding.
It's a promise. And that's really the straw that broke the camel's back for me is for 3.5 months, he told the state of Arizona that the Red for Ed folks were just playing political theater and playing games. And then in a matter of 2 days in the middle of April, he panics and caves in and says, you know, oh, I got to get reelected this year. I'm going to throw out a 20% raise and no way to pay for it.
He did that in this studio, by the way.
Did he?
He was in here one day and said, we can only do 1%. And then 2 days later, he's back and said, I found 20%.
You know, I served, as you mentioned, as the Senate president for 4 years, from 2003 to 2007. And I worked with Janet Napolitano those 4 years, and we balanced 4 years of budgets without raising taxes. In fact, we did the largest tax cut in the history of the state during my tenure as Senate president, a 10% across the board income tax cut to Arizonans. But during that 4 years, we also put more new money into K-12 education than any other 4 years in the history of the state.
Let me, in fairness, in that period, the economic situation was completely different. We had a we had a burgeoning, growing economy.
Not in 03 and 04.
Just overall in that period, meaning that it was possible to both cut taxes and have more revenue, which clearly what has not been true since 07, 08.
Well, and that's because when you make a decision to increase spending by $1 billion a year, like Napolitano did the year after I left, and put the state into a huge hole. You know, I watched that horror show 10 years ago. When I left in 07, the budget was balanced at $9.5 billion coming in and going out. We had rebuilt the rainy day fund from $13 million to $1.1 billion. And then they increased spending.
Except 2007, 2008 was when the American economy collapsed. That's a really different period of situation.
But whenever you commit $1 billion or more spending without a sustainable way to pay for it, you're putting the state at risk.
My point is, in 04, 05, 06, 07, that's pretty easy to do. Money's coming in faster than you can spend it. In 07, the bottom falls out.
In 03 and 04, the budgets were tight. We actually had to cut budgets in 03. We had to keep the budgets level in 04. Yes, 05 and 06, the housing boom caught fire and some revenues came in. But we saved $1 billion of that revenue. I had the foresight to say, you know, these are probably one-time revenues. We shouldn't commit to spend them in the annual budget like Governor Napolitano wanted to do. And fortunately, we saved $1 billion. But when she then increased spending another $1 billion the next year, she put the state in the same situation that I think Ducey has put it in right now.
So let me make sure I understand you. You're saying the governor is spending too much? Is that your
bottom
line?
No, I'm saying the governor is telling us one thing and doing something else. He told us 2 years ago that he was going to support repealing Obamacare, as did Senator McCain. And then a year later, when Senator McCain had the chance—
McCain went thumbs down, for sure.
And Ducey asked him to do that. Ducey asked him to.
Is that on the public record?
I thought
Ducey said otherwise.
Well, they've tried to say otherwise since then.
Okay.
But if you look at the public record at the time, McCain said for weeks that he was going to follow the lead of the governor of his state. He trusted his governor, going to follow his lead. He votes thumbs down, and then when the stuff started to stick on Ducey, Ducey, you know, kept Obamacare by telling McCain to vote no on the repeal. Now they're both trying to backtrack and say, oh, well, whatever.
But I think Ducey would question that. I did not see a public statement where he said to vote in favor of retaining Obamacare.
Well, here's the tweets. One tweet, I remain firmly – no, Ducey said, it's no secret Obamacare has been a disaster for Arizona, and I want it repealed and replaced. And then a day later, however, I agree with Senator John McCain that the bill on the table clearly isn't the right approach for Arizona. So if you want to try to have it both ways and tell us you're supporting the repeal of Obamacare and then you tell the senator to not repeal it. So we're just being told one thing when another thing is happening.
Fair point. But the question I have for you is you're painting a picture that, and I think this part is true, that there have been some budgetary gimmicks to provide some revenue streams to meet, for example, the demands of teachers. That all you didn't get from a 1% to a 9% raise without finding some money somewhere. Now, those things he found were not permanent revenue streams. They were one-time savings.
And we're taking other expenses in the state budget that happen every year.
Yep.
And they're calling them one-time expenditures, like maintaining our school buildings. You have to do that every year. But if you look at the details in the budget, like I understand, having been a Senate president and done four budgets, you realize that you have to spend money on school maintenance every year. Just calling it one-time spending for the next couple of years so that you can keep it off of the budget balance sheet and tell people that the budget's balanced and we have a sustainable revenue to pay for all these things that we're adding. Those are the kinds of things that I think are not the truth, and the people deserve the truth.
What? No quarrel there. What I'm having trouble getting and understanding, are you arguing that we should be honest about increasing revenues, or are you saying we should actually be cutting programs? And if you're cutting programs, number one is education, because that's the biggest part of the state budget.
No, I'm saying that we need to be wise with the amount of money that we're spending. If you take the amount of state, local, and federal funds that are now going into K-12 education alone, mm-hmm. it's over $10 billion a year. Mm-hmm. Are we getting everything we can out of that funding? If you divide that $10 billion by about 1.1 million students in the K-12 school system, it's over $9,500 per student. If there's the average class size is about 30. Mm-hmm. If there's 30 kids in a class and somewhere in the system there's $9,000 per student per child, there's $270,000 somewhere in the system, and the average teacher salary is 48. What are we doing with the other 222,000 of funding for that classroom? So I think we do need to be looking at some restructuring of our tax system so that it flows with the economic cycles rather than falls off the cliff. In 2008, as you noted earlier, we had about a 10% recession, mm-hmm. but the general fund of the state of Arizona went down by 33%. So if we had strong, steady leaders—
Because we're heavily dependent on sales taxes, among
right.
other things.
Well, and we have just a few items, new cars and new homes. We tax those very high.
And people stop buying those in a recession.
Yeah.
So when you base your economy on a sales tax—
Well, if we broadened the sales tax base and lowered the rate and we had more transactions, then maybe our revenue would flow with the economic cycle.
Interesting point. Now, this will be the last question before we break. There is a proposal that it looks like it's going to be on the ballot that would constrain your ability to do that.
Well, it's to tax services or
right. They want to prohibit the taxing of services. Yeah. It's one of those things like, yeah, okay, that sounds like a new tax. I'm for prohibiting that. But it also precludes the legislature from adjusting the system by saying maybe we could lower the tax rates overall by taxing more. So if I get a massage, maybe that ought to be taxed, as opposed to somebody paying taxes on groceries, which the state doesn't do, but many localities do too.
So, and that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Let's be honest with people and identify how we're going to pay for the things that we say we can pay for. And don't tell us we have balanced budgets when our debt has gone up by $1 billion in the last 4 years.
Okay, we'll be back with Ken Bennett, a Republican candidate for governor, in the think tank when we return in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're here with Ken Bennett, a Republican candidate for governor, challenging Governor Doug Ducey. We've been talking about taxes. You know, that's one of the biggest things that government, they decide to tax.
Sure.
And it's not only how much you tax, it's how you distribute it. I want to present to you some facts here. A national study that was done of all 50 states. In Arizona, the poorest 20% pays 12.5% of their income on taxes. The middle 60% pays 9.5%. The top 1% pays 4.6%. That's in part because we're so heavily reliant on sales taxes. Does that bother you?
No. We receive about half of our money from sales tax. We receive about half of it from income tax. You can look at other things that say the top 1% pay 60% of the sales.
Not if you're basing on total taxes.
No, not total taxes. But so I do not support the initiative that's going to be on the ballot to almost double taxes on our wealthiest Arizonans. I think that if we want to attract jobs and companies to come to Arizona, we need to keep our income taxes low. In fact, I'd like to see us move, as Governor Ducey again promised. He promised that he was going to get our income tax rates as close to zero as possible. And in the four budgets he's proposed, there's not been one point tenth of a percent or anything that they've reduced that.
Turns out there are some government needs.
Well, there are. But, we could reform our tax system. And I think Arizona should be the 10th state to not have an income tax. There's 9 other states, some very conservative Texas, others very liberal like Washington that do a budget without a state personal income tax. So,
we're number 8 in terms of being the most regressive of states in terms of taxing relatively high taxes on the poor. Number one state in the country for the most regressive is Washington because they don't have a state income tax.
Okay. Well, but they've chosen to do it that way. And there's eight other states that don't have an income tax. And, you know, when companies leave California because of what's happening over there, they're flying over Arizona and ended up in Texas and North Carolina and Tennessee and Florida. And I'd like to see
most of those states have better education systems than we do.
And I'd like to see that improve. Two-thirds of our third graders can't read. And by the time it gets to high school, it's 71% can't show competency on reading and writing. That was the other second. The two big promises that Ducey made is we're going to improve our education system and get income taxes as close to zero as possible. I don't think anything's happened on either one of them.
Well, we've talked about the tax side. What would you do to improve education?
Well, one of the things that I think distinguishes me from the governor is protecting our children. He released a school safety plan that was focused on trying to take guns away from people. I don't think that protects students at all. My school safety operation plan would put guns where they can protect our students in a worst case scenario, a live shooter situation. If elected governor, I'll call together a task force. We'll focus on identifying with experts and school people and teachers and parents how we can make our schools as safe as, let's say, sporting events or airports or whatever. But the best.
So who's going to be armed? Who's going to have these guns?
School personnel who want to. It's a voluntary program. Mm-hmm. I would ask the task force to pattern after a program in Ohio called FASTER, Faculty Administrator Safety Training and Emergency Response. Mm-hmm. They train them on emergency medical response, responding to an armed crisis, crisis management, and if they are willing. You know, a lot of people in the schools maybe have been ex-military, former law enforcement, or personal law enforcement or personal firearm training. And I think the best way to stop a bad person with a gun is a few good people there at the same time, same place.
Sounds like you're angling for an NRA endorsement.
No, here. No, I know I won't get the NRA endorsement. I think I'll get the even more vibrant next group that I can't announce right now because it may or may not have happened yet. But I don't think endorsements are going to win this race, but I think common sense.
Seldom do.
I think common sense policies and people knowing that here's a person who has a proven track record, not only in public service, but I've run businesses for 30, 35 years, come from the Prescott area and, you know, born in Tucson and ran a family business for 25 years. So common sense solutions is what Arizonans are looking for. And I think they're looking for leaders that provide strong, steady leadership and tell the truth. Tell us what's really going on, because right now I don't think we're getting that.
You associated yourself with the birther movement. Do you still believe?
No, I didn't.
Do you believe that Barack Obama was born in this country?
Yes. I did not associate with the birth. That's a misnomer of people.
Then clarify.
Okay. I was contacted by Arizona voters who said, you know, nobody in the country who has anything to do with official responsibilities in elections, and I was the chief elections official in Arizona, nobody has taken advantage of a procedure that Hawaii has on their state law that says, you know, nobody, if you're a birther, you're not going to believe whether the president's birth certificate was a fake or not. So I was contacted by some voters in Arizona who said, there's a thing in Hawaii's laws where you can ask them, but the ask has to come from a government official of another state. Will you verify that you do have a valid birth certificate for this person born on this day? That's all I did. I filled out a form. I sent it in. And when they returned the form and said yes, it was just like me as the Secretary of State of Arizona, where I validate for other states when they call or write and ask, is Jane Smith a notary public in the state of Arizona? I simply say, yes, we have a valid credential for Jane Smith as a notary in Arizona, so you can accept her documents that she notarized in Florida or wherever. So all I did was just ask Hawaii to verify that they have a birth certificate for Barack Obama born on whatever day he was born on. And when they said yes, he was on the ballot. I'm not.
So this was pursuant to establishing the ballot.
Yes. And I'm the chief elections official. I have to decide who gets on the ballot. We required them to fill out the same paperwork that everybody else did. So I didn't associate. I got associated because of that situation.
Well, yeah, I mean, it looked to the outside world that you were pandering to that group.
No, I was actually responding to people who said, you know, the birthers are never going to believe that the birth certificate is real or not. So why doesn't somebody in the country, and they showed me that nobody yet had, call Hawaii and go through this process where they will provide a verification.
There were other people. I mean, Joe Arpaio sent a posse out there.
He was – no, but he was checking on whether or not the birth certificate was an original or not. That was never going to be agreed between both sides. I simply did what a government official would do between another state. Ask the officials of Hawaii, do you have a birth certificate for this person born on that date? And they said yes.
And yeah, that was my recall, that was that they sent back a rather dismissive kind of letter saying, you know, it's
– It was respectful and just said, yes, we have the birth certificate for that person.
Okay. Issue settled. You're not a birther.
Oh, right. That's correct. Yeah. I believe he was born in Hawaii like they said he was.
So, which is a state?
Yes,
lest there be any
doubt.
Last I checked. Okay, what would be the first couple of things you'd do as governor?
Well, I just mentioned I would call together a task force on school safety and make sure that our facilities are as hard as they can be.
Do you think that safety is the number one issue in terms of underperforming schools?
No. You said, but I just was talking about school safety.
I was going, but earlier on when I asked your education program, you went straight to safety.
Well. I would sit down with the legislators on both sides and start working on the budget. The biggest definition of what the government does and how the governor and the legislature control it is where do they spend our tax dollars? There's about $10 billion of state money plus another three or four in some other funds. And then there's tens of billions of dollars of federal money that we get in. And so where we put our money is our ultimate policy statement. So I would start working with legislators on both sides of the aisle to figure out how are we going to spend the money that we have more efficiently and more effectively? How are we going to
Education.
In education and everywhere else.
We're under a minute, but I'll give you a chance for a micro question on that. Conservatives tend to believe in local government. And if you're going to decide where the money goes at the state level, aren't you undermining the local school boards?
No, I think you can have standards that say, of the money that you receive, you've got to put some money in the high priorities like teacher salaries and making sure that students... I would be focusing on the academic performance of our students. Mm-hmm. And right now, two-thirds can't read at third grade level, and it gets worse as they go. Mm-hmm. And I know that my time is limited now. I'm going to ask your listeners to go to kenbennett.com. I'm raising the $5 contributions under the Clean Elections Program. I need people to go to kenbennett.com and give me $5 so that I can run an effective campaign. People are going to have a choice in the Republican primary, and I think I give Republicans the best shot of winning in November.
And a free commercial at the end. You can't ask for more than that. Ken Bennett will be back next week discussing this and other things in the Think Tank.